Adjective.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to another episode of Indie Comic Spotlight, the show where we do a deep dive into an ongoing series or graphic novel from a company other than the big two. And today is a very special day for two reasons. Number one, it's another Creator Corner with a friend of the show. And reason two, and I haven't told him this yet, but we are just past the fourth anniversary. 4 years ago was the first time you came on the show. You were my fourth ever guest, Thanos, fourth guest ever. You came on the show. It was 4 years ago. It was the end of February, early March in 2020. My very first episode of Indie Comic Spotlight was February 7th, I think, of 2020. And you were out. So end of February, early March. It was just past our fourth anniversary. And here you are. Hello.
Hi. How are you?
I'm great. Welcome back, my friend. You're here. You're in Greece.
4 years ago, Mike.
4 years ago. Can you believe it? It's crazy. Look at us.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's amazing. And that was when you did Borders, which is still one of the most beautiful pieces of art I've ever owned. I love it. We were talking off air about Borders, and you, of course, it's like they knew. For those who don't, Thanos is Greek, and so he did his mandatory service, and they put him on the border with Turkey. So it's almost like they were forcing you to write Borders too. Apparently, they were like, "We're gonna put you here." And you can interview all these people and tell this story. Borders is such a glorious piece. It's a way of, I just want to keep praising you again because I love that book so much. And it is because it's art, but it's nonfiction. And it's just beautiful. It's just lovely. And I just think it's really important piece. And so it was really amazing that you got to sort of live that. I mean, obviously, because you went to school in Scotland, Borders mean a lot to you. But just the way that you've lived your life. But so that's just kind of crazy. It all came full circle. So here we are. So Thanos was on about 2 years ago when Dreamlands 1 came out. And now he's back because a new Dreamlands, 100-pager, dude, is coming out. So we'll talk all about that and stuff. So how you been? Tell everybody all the cool stuff. You said you have a bunch going on.
Yep. So 4 years ago. Wow. Time really passes. So yeah, what happened in these four years? Quick recap. So
Borders recap. Just real quick.
So Borders came out. It received two awards, and Tony's decided to teach it in I think it was Siena Heights, right?
Yep, and so did Seth. Absolutely.
Yeah,
yep.
And so did Seth. Then Stelios and I, my main partner in Loudmouse Crew, we got serious about what we wanted to do and started focusing on Dreamlands, a dark fantasy series about the power of stories and how they can change lives. So Dreamlands 1 came out on Kickstarter. It was successful. Dreamlands 2 came out and it was successful. Now we're moving to the third installment of the series, Dreamlands. The plot twist is that the first two were Dreamlands Lives and Epics. This one is Dreamlands World Walkers, focusing on a whole different cast of characters. And it's a dark fantasy tale about a warrior that's trying to find out what's true, what isn't, how do they fit in a world they just came to exist.
Look at that. Wow. Yeah. Summed up. And I really do love Dreamlands. I think that's I love that book. And I, as a person who doesn't remember his dream, like, you know, we all dream, but I don't remember my dreams. Like, my whole life, I only have remembered like 5 or 6 dreams in my life. But I always love the idea of like living in the dream space. But what I think you do so beautifully in those books, and what I'm looking forward to is this book, as you said it right there, is what's real. It's like you take this idea of what we think, what we live about is a dream, but to these people, it's real. And now they're like, the big question that I always get, like, in your books, in Borders and in Dreamlands, is you're always pushing the boundary of belief versus reality. Like, because the whole point you do in Borders is like they're fictional. Unless there's a river, or in your case in Greece, there's a body of water in the south end of your country. Unless it's something like that, borders are arbitrary. It's bullshit. But it's all fiction, but we pretend it's really real. Like, you know, there's like, oh, we're going to make up this in my country. We're building fences and all kinds of stupid shit like that. You know, and I grew up in Michigan where it's like, there's Canada. There's some water there, but it's really easy. Like a friend of mine grew up on Gros Eel, it was called, in the Detroit River. And in the, you know, in the 70s and 80s, you would just get in your boat and row over. And then you'd just be in the other country. And there was a little phone that you'd just pick it up and somebody in customs and you'd be like, hey, I'm in the country. They're like, cool, call us when you get home. And that was it. Because it was arbitrary. It's just silly nonsense. Yeah. This idea. And so like you're always pushing us to think about this stuff that isn't really real, air quotes, but that we've made real. And then also like the stuff that we dismiss, we poo-poo, as you even said, as fantasy, but it is really real to people. So like, where is that from? Where does that come from inside you, this idea that you're playing with reality and the conversations you want to have with your audience about it?
So to be fair, now I'll give you a synopsis for Dreamlands World Workers so we have an idea of where it's going. So Dreamlands World Workers starts in Dreamlands. It's not necessary for someone to have read the first two in order to have a grasp for what's happening in World Workers. So it's a standalone book, and it follows the story of a character called Tiktokta. He's a dragon warrior that completes a task that was thought to be impossible. So to give you some world building details. So the dragons have a quest that's called the Ring Painting, and because of the magic of dragons, you have to literally enter into another world and defeat all the stories that have been, that are, and that will be. So in that sense, no one until TikTok has achieved it. And when he does, he comes out and he is immediately granted a legendary status, because up until then, no one had managed it. The thing is, TikTok has been away for a long time, and the dragons have changed. The entirety of Dreamlands has changed. And now he has to feed himself in a world that has moved past him, but at the same time, he's acknowledged as a legend by the others. So he has done something right to complete the impossible task, but the world has progressed without him. So there is a conflict of what is more powerful, the thing that the inner truth that I know for myself to be, or what everyone else literally believes. Now, to be fair, this is mostly a conception of Stelios. He's the co-creator of Dreamlands. And he had this idea spinning inside his head for a long time. And he kind of like kickstarted me, pun intended, into this one. Because I think it was September. September 2023, when he announced me, okay, I have this idea. I have been working on it. And I didn't tell you, I have been working on it without a script, because I have it. But, I'm like, okay, I can write you a script. And he's like, yeah, but I'm 20 pages in. And I'm like, why?
Now you got to use these images into the script.
That's how we started. We started working it. Stage was making the storyboards, and he was creating the panels first, and then I was coming in to add the text. That's how it started. And after, and because we've been working for 3 years together, we have a great communication in that sense. We know what is needed to be said in the stories. But like when he told me he was 20 pages in, I had to like work for, yeah, because he had been boiling inside his brain for like 6 months. So he knew how he wanted to do it. So I started like trying to catch up, and I had to reinvent the way that I do when I write scripts in order to catch up and go ahead.
That's crazy.
Yeah, and that's how basically it developed. It's a story. It's a conflict about, you know, because deep down, it's a hard truth to realize. It's a struggle to realize what's true. Is it the thing that I know it's true, or am I completely misconceived about what everyone else is thinking? So it's this duality that is the driving force for this Dreamlands.
That's well, see, I think the duality, though, that's what I was getting at. That's what you do. I mean, everything you've done, I mean, even in the other Dreamlands, it's there. And in Borders, it's there. It's this idea of like you said, the truth that you know, the truth that everybody else thinks. And it's just like, it's with whatever, we're such a, I think fantasy science fiction, Ursula K. Le Guin, you know, one of the greatest fantasy and science fiction writers of all time, she always says, like, they're not, the commentary that they're giving is not about the future. It's about the now. It just may be set in the future. It may be set in the past, but really commenting on what they live in. And they're not really, and it seems like they're being so insightful or so philosophical, but all they're just doing is like looking. They're being really objective. And they're like, well, what if we, but somehow by setting it in a fantasy land, by putting it in a dark place, by adding the stakes, you people then can remove the lens that they're seeing the world in, and now they're seeing it through this, and they're like, oh, this makes it, this, now that I'm seeing it, he's got horns, or he's this, he's a dragon warrior. Well, he doesn't have to be a dragon. I mean, he looks fucking cool, by the way. I'm glad. I mean, he looks awesome. God, he's such a great artist, but like, he looks really cool, but the story is the story, right? It doesn't have to be that, but by making it this other thing, it allows us to see the truth, and it allows us to you know, to deal with with that reality.
Because the story is only a medium to tell what's really after. Because I think you cannot ignore, there's always like an intrinsic part for everyone who creates a story that you put inside, even if it's not like the dominant one, it's always underlying there. Because for me, Dreamlands 1 was when I was in a really bad place psychologically, and I mean, you've read it. It's not the exactly the cheeriest kind of
but it's really thoughtful.
But it has this like self-introspect, like I need to find a meaning for why I'm here. Because Dreamlands 1, everyone is dead. There's a single character called Pernathoris, and he starts collecting all the stories that in the dead world to create something, because he needs to give himself a meaning. Now in Dreamlands 2, that I'm not going to spoil, something happens, and it's a page from my own life, because I've spent a lot of time abroad and teaching, so people are coming together and they're learning from each other. So you have this, how do I change the future? I change the future by shaping the present. And you have...
Yes.
I mean, whether you like it or not, we will always be putting part of ourselves inside the stories we tell. The trick is not to let the part of ourselves define the stories we tell.
It's like, totally true. It's true. Yeah, and you have to be open to that. And you have to be you. And it's a vulnerability, right? I mean, you're the writer of these pieces. And obviously it's a co-creation thing, and he's making the art, but of course you can be like, well, he needs to look up. And then this one, because he started it without you, we can talk a little bit about the process, but like, you still have that ability. You know, when you speak to comic writers, they still are like some writers will be like, no, I don't care. I just said, make them look cool. And then he made them look cool. Or sometimes like, no, I need you to go in and move this. I want this fang here or whatever. But regardless of what the characters look like, as the creators, you have to be vulnerable. You have to say that, like, admit what you just admit. Like, all the characters I write are me a little bit, or there's somebody I know, or are commenting on an experience I have. And do you think that's what makes, like, you can tell when art becomes commodity as opposed to art, right? Like, your stories and this idea of kickstarting them, and, you know, in Loudmouth Crew, you guys have your own company, you're doing your own thing, but you still are continuing to come back to the folks every time. You're coming back to us and the people who love it and want to support it and who are constantly there. You've made a fan base and a real connection with us because it's honest. Do you think if you went a different route, if you guys sold it to Image or sold it to Dark Horse or something, well, of course it would get a bigger reach. Would you worry that you'd lose some of that personal touch in the storytelling?
I mean, let's be honest, indie publishing is not the easiest field you can work in, because it's you have to do everything by yourself. Okay?
Yeah.
You have to find the creed, like what is the team's creed? Our creed is simple. In order to have sustainable comics and manga, you need to be able to make it not a commodity, to make it something that people will buy. It will be cheap. They will not regret buying it. Because it's simple as that. Because if it's affordable, people will not regret. Even if they don't like it, they will not regret it. And that's our advantage, not being in the States and being able to produce our stuff in Europe. Now, I'm gonna be honest with you. If we ever pitched it in a larger company, like let's say Dark Horse, I think we would lose some of the creative control, but it would make our lives simpler, you know, because we could focus solely on creating, not on the let's say on literally everything, because part of my day is I have to mail the printer, I have to mail the courier company, I have to answer I have to do the marketing, I have to do everything myself, and that's okay because you actually learn everything, you connect on many different levels, and you see what is needed and what's happening. But at this point, we do have a clear creative vision of what we want to do. We our comics are black and white for a specific reason, because they're much more affordable. They have a unique signature style, which I know because having Red Dreamlands, you can support that they have this unique signature style, but they focus on substance, not so much. They're not that flashy. I wouldn't say that they're really, really flashy. They are drawn by hand, which gives them a unique nitty gritty style, but it's different in the sense that we focus more on what you can read and what you can, as a reader, take in. You become part of the world. And this is actually our greatest accomplishment in Loudmouth Crew, because we have made a commitment to keep the comics and the manga we made affordable and sustainable for others. And that's how the community grows. Because I don't want to talk too much about the Kickstarter, although I will. Our key point was we don't charge shipping fees, and the books are, you know, affordable because
they're
they have
really nice.
Be.
I mean, and you know, you say you don't charge, which is crazy. So like, I'm in America and you've sent me everything that I've ever ordered from you. It's timely. I get it. It's not a pain in the ass. That's not cheap, man. It's like, so like the one I got the PDF and the bound book, $20. $20 and it's coming from another country. Like, I couldn't go down to my local shop and buy a 100-page comic for $20.
Yeah, no,
couldn't do it.
No, I've discussed the prices and it's insane. But again, you have to realize that you will take some losses, but you have to acknowledge, because that's part of the production. That's part of the creative thing that you have to know. You have to be aware how much it costs to produce, how much it costs for people to buy, and to be, because that's how you invite more people. Because again, because I think, okay, $20 in Greece would be somewhat of an investment. I think for the people in the US, it's not that much of an investment.
No, and I mean, and even if you just wanted to get, because you give people the option of like, I always get the print of everything that you do. Mm. Like some, there are some Kickstarters. I will admit there's some Kickstarters that I only get the PDFs. And that's because, again, like you said, especially the ones that are a little more expensive, but I'm like, well, that's a good project, I want to back it. The PDF's $5 and they'll send me like 5 comics. Cool. I'll do that. Because they do charge shipping or whatever. And then it's up to like $40-$50 for something. I'm like, well, I can spend 5 or 10 and get a bunch of cool digital comics. And I don't mind reading digital comics, but like people are my friends, people like you, like Gabe, there's people who are like, no, I got to get James Aquilone. I need that print copy. I need that in my hot little hands. And there's something magical about it when somebody, you know, somebody you get those, and I should have had them here. They're on my bookshelf over there. I should have had your books right in front of me. There's something about, like, especially with Borders, I can't come back to that enough. Like when I got my physical copy, because you sent me the PDF so we could get it into the classrooms, which of course that's how our students bought the PDF from Gumroad, right? For again, you were selling that for $5, dude. I mean, That's like the cheapest textbook anybody's ever going to buy. Nobody's ever going to spend $5 on a book they get to read in a class. I mean, that's crazy.
Yeah, because you see, like, how much should it be? Like, honestly, how much should it be for someone to buy something? Because because you see, I'll be honest. I mean, I know how much time people, because I usually read it myself. How much I often record myself how much time I spend reading, and it's not that much. It's like you put it down in perspective when you say, like, how much should, because it's not exactly art. It's something between art, craft, and something that you hold, something. It shouldn't be, it should be cheap, affordable, and for people to not regret buying it.
It's totally true. And I mean, there's no regret. I mean, when people are going to get these, and we'll link to everything, and we'll talk all that stuff too. Like I said, I mean, seriously. So if you're in the UK, you know, I mean, it's £14. That's what it comes up for whatever reason. It comes up as pounds on when I log into Kickstarter. So, you know, it translates into dollars for me. £14, and you get this 100 plus you send them the PDF. So you get it early and then you get the print copy later. That's ridiculous for what you're getting. Because again, think about going to the comic shop, think about going to the bookstore, go wherever. It is this way to support art. It's like when I buy music, I try to buy music from Bandcamp instead of from other places, right? So if I'm going to buy the digital music, I don't stream, I buy music. That's one of the things I do, is like when a new band comes out, when my favorite band comes out, or I'll support them on Patreon. You know, like I've got a couple of bands that I support on Patreon monthly. And then every time they put out a new song, like MC Lars, he's this laptop rapper that I love. Every song is $2. That's what he charges. So if some months he may write 4 songs and you pay $8. Some months it's only $2 because he only put out 1 song that month. But a month never goes by. You get at least 12 songs a year from him for $2. There's no regret. It's a $2 download. It's original. Only people in the Patreon get it. It's amazing. And I mean, is that something, because I don't think you guys don't have a Patreon, do you? Is that something you've thought about?
We do. We need to restructure it.
Okay. I will sign up. I guess I didn't realize you had one.
No, it's one of them. We haven't, because you see, the thing with indie publishing is you have to find a formula. You have to find a formula to be sustainable. Mm-hmm. I have to make sure that there is a stream of income for you to actually keep generating something. I will make the lowest tier possible. That would be a €1, $1 one. Because the thing is, look, I've made the discussion with other creatives, with other people in applied arts, in music, in videography, in photography. You put in way too many hours to ever be not reimbursed, to ever make it up in money. Especially when, because we are two, okay, we have double the hours and the brain power and the computing power and everything. We will always be putting more and more and more than any other time than we will receive money for. The thing is, if you accept the fact that you should be building a community, you should be opening up your work to a broader scene, everybody wins. Because you will not be commodifying your art. You will not be commodifying something. You shouldn't be turning it into a niche. And I think that's the problem that many creators do. I do speak from Greece, which is, things are different here. We have found a way of producing it. We have found a way of producing cheap books and. Cheap books, not in matter of quality, in matter of you know, printing
of cost. Yeah, yeah. Inexpensive, yeah. We'll say.
Yeah, cheap. Inexpensive.
Yeah, because they're definitely not cheap. Yeah.
Yeah. But the thing is, and we do take advantage of that, but the thing is, we want people to read more comics. And how do you make people read comics during an era where everything is fucking expensive, okay? It's insane how expensive things are. And keep in mind that when you are an indie publisher and an indie creator, you have to always, you are in competition, not with other indie creators. you are in competition with the big ones. And the big ones right now is any manga that's published, that is published, any comic that is published, and you need to make a difference and have your own community. How do you do that? You create something that people can relate to and they will not regret about it.
I love that. I love that. I just that because art is really important. And you know, people say, like, unfortunately in America, whatever, there's like budget cuts in schools or whatever, people, there's like culture wars. It's always about art. And it's always frustrating because like everything is art. The computer we're talking through is art. Somebody designed it. Somebody sat there. Science is art. Everything is art. And so it's like, even just the design of my headphones, somebody had to think that through, like how big should that be? And what would that look like? And whatever it is, everything that you do is artistic. And yet we try to cut back on that. And if we, but in our hearts, we know, I mean, you do, you know, obviously there's the hierarchy of needs, right? You need food, clothing, shelter, love, then art. And love and art to me go together, right? They're the same thing. Like you can express your love in art. A friend of mine just asked me to write a short story for a collection of hers. Mm-hmm. It's like love stories. And instead of like writing a romance love story, I wrote like one about sisters. And mm-hmm. and like the way, you know, like siblings can love each other. And I wrote this story and I like really, I hope when people read it, they're moved and I'm really proud of it. And because I tapped into that, like, and it's about a shared experience of writing letters, listening to music, and like really nothing happens, but they like, when you're done reading it, hopefully you feel filled up. When I'm done reading your stuff, Thanos, I always feel thoughtful. And I feel introspective. I feel like I need to have a conversation with somebody who read it. I'm like, oh, I got to give it to somebody because I need to talk to somebody about it. You know, because like when you're alone and you're reading something, my wife and I, about half of the books we read every year, we each read about 200-ish books a year. We each read about half of them are the same. So that we sit at dinner. One of our kids says you have the world's smallest book club. We just sit at dinner every night and we talk about what we're reading. And when we read the same books and we wait till we're both done, and that'll be like hours of like joyous conversations talking about the intricacies. So it's like, what I love about what you do though, is whatever it is, whether it's somebody I know has read it or not read it, I get to have that conversation with myself. I can reflect on it in my journal. I can be like, how does this inspire me to do my own art? Like you guys do that, the work that you guys do, just the stories that you've said and this passion you have. But so you're inspiring people in multiple ways because you're making art that you're telling people, especially in the first, and I've not read the new one, but in the first Dreamlands, that's what you're saying. Collect stories, tell stories, don't let stories die. So you're inspiring us to tell our stories, but then also you're inspiring us to be artists because you're living the dream yourself. So I appreciate the work that you do. And that's why I'm always happy to have you on and support you and back your Kickstarters and be part of your community. Which again, just because you sent an email 4 years ago, here we are. You know what I mean? That's you reach. You know, it's just it's amazing. And so I'm just like so. It's really amazing how far you've come in the 4 years too. By the way,
I think my introvert self slowly dies every time I have to plan a Kickstarter because you have to do. Okay, the thing is, in your mind. When you work out, this is what I was talking about. Basically, like whenever we structure Kickstarter, we now have, I have created a manual. I have literally a manual which I send to people, say, this is how it works. And people still like perplexed about the fact that it might not charge them up front. This is the stuff that you have to do. And it's fun. It's fun because you get to meet people. It's fun because you get to introduce people to new ideas and new concepts. And it's all, but like the introvert part of myself screams a little bit whenever I have to do the communication stuff. This I like, the talking about, especially like meeting people from, because we literally half a world apart. And we're out here talking about interesting ideas.
We are. And I think that's really important. What I love too is that you mentioned like the idea of indie publishing. It is hard. Like my publisher is an indie publisher and that's what they told me. They're like, look, we like your book. We're going to publish all six of your series. But with that comes, like we were saying, comes being on Instagram. It comes doing posts. Now my wife is really creative and she does all my, like, so if you see a post, odds are she made it. She made what it looks like. You know, like she made the image and she does my graphic design and she made my website look cool. And Seth if hopefully you're okay, buddy. I know Seth was supposed to join us today, and was unable to. But she designed Seth's website for him too. And it's just like she's got this knack. It's something that I needed, but something I struggle with, like the promotion part, like everything you said. But what they also said to me was, we're gonna let your book be your book. You know, like my editors edit for typos, continuity errors, but like they don't come back to me and say, we don't like this ending. You know, that you can tell too. And you know, and like you said, you give up some of that creative control. You are telling the story you want to tell. This book is done. You're kickstarting it to get it in our hands. The beautiful thing about what you guys do over at Loudmouse is you make the art first, then you sell it, then you try to make your money back. Like I said, you're never going to make your money back, but you try to like at least fund getting it into the world, as opposed to it being dictated to you, Thanos, write the story. Now, of course, this one particular case, he started the story without you, but it was still collaborative. You're friends, so it's different. You know, it's different, like to be a work for hire, to be like, oh, I want you to come, but give me 10,000 words on whatever. And you're like, okay, I can. But then the editor, the owner of that property can come back and say to you, oh, no, this doesn't work. Or no, like if you had the chance to write Batman, I mean, who wouldn't want to write Batman? But also, that as cool as that is, it's got to be constraining, because you can't necessarily do Batman the way you'd want to do Batman, because, you know, Jim Lee's going to, and I mean, granted, if I ever got an email from Jim Lee telling me no, that means Jim Lee has my email address. So that's fine. Jim Lee could send me an email address and email anytime telling me no, because I would have gotten an email from Jim Lee. But you know what I mean? It's like that idea of not being free. You guys are totally free to tell your story.
I think it's okay. So we had I had a discussion with Mike Vialinas. Perhaps you know him. He's one of the few. He's one of the few Greek people that are have an international career in comics. He did Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, and he worked with James Tynion IV.
Nice.
And we had. He has his solo book Zawa coming out. He has his solo book coming out called Zawa and the Belly of the Beast. He produced everything himself, like
nice.
Script, art, everything, cover designs. He did everything himself. I think he did it with Boom. I'm not
100%.
You should check it out. The thing is, because we were talking, he gave me like the advice that he says basically people are trying to do issues, and then when the series is paid off, in a sense, they will do the trade paperback, and it makes sense in this way that you're testing the waters with the first issue, you're drafting out something. But I actually want your opinion on this one. What do you prefer? Do you prefer single issues, or do you wait for the trade paperback?
Well, as an older man, I wait for the trade. As a younger person who, you know, couldn't wait, I got the floppies. I would go to the comic shop, you know, like when I was a kid in high school and in college, I had a pull box and I'd go once a week. Now, personally, I wait for the trade. Simply because I mean, the truth is it's convenience. But I don't necessarily, my concern, and like you talked about Boom, Boom does trade. Some of their trades are 5, some are 6, some are 7. They do let the artist decide how long the trade is. Do you know what I mean? Like, they're not forcing them into saying like every 5, you got to bind it or whatever. Because sometimes your story's not done in 5. So I do now prefer to wait for the trade, just because I feel it's more satisfying and it's just the kind of reader that I am.
There's this, wait, how can I put it? There's this thing, because when you're putting a, how you say, when you're creating an issue,
uh-huh.
You have this pressure that you need to crank out the pages. Like, and it's like you said, you have to give 10,000 words of this and this and this. And I think that's the problem sometimes with the Shonen Weekly, because you have to crank out 20 pages every week, 20 pages every 15 days. And this builds up something that you don't have time to go back. You don't have time to let it sit in the drawer. when we took the chance, because it was a chance, okay, when we took the chance to say that, okay, we'll start moving on to graphic novels or volumes or more collected pieces of work, it was a risk, because you do get more time to read, you do get more time to edit, to go back, to add pages, to see what's missing, to design a more compact and standalone piece of work. But at the same time, you are putting in more hours, you are putting in more production time, and you realize that if it's not that, you know, this major success, it will be much, much more difficult.
No, it's true. No, it is true. And, it, you know, like, that's the thing with the floppy, though. You're right. It's they're less expensive. It feels like less of a risk to spend $3, $5 to get a floppy indie comic. You're like, well, like you said, nobody's going to regret that, supporting an indie author for, you know, $3 or $5 to go to a con, wherever. That is true. And I do think that there's something to that. A friend of mine, Kyle, his book, his collected, is out with Marcosia now. They're the British company, Marcosia. He lives here in America. He actually did individual issues of his comic, Evil Cast, and he gave them away for free digitally on his website. He just gave them away. He didn't print them. He just gave them away. And then through that, he got reviews. He got that. Then he pulled them down, and then he put them out as a collection. So he made them individual, digital, and then did a print of the graphic novel. So that's just a different model. Everybody does a different model. And I can see, like, that was a bit, he wasn't earning any money. Whereas, like, if he had kickstarted each end of every one of those, he would have at least got, you know, he just paid paid Enrico out of pocket, which I don't know that he'll ever, like you said, I don't know if he'll ever break even, but I physically own a copy of the book. So that, you know, that's cool.
You know which part won me? You know, when I decided, okay, I want to do, you know, trade paperbacks. I don't want to do issues anymore. And it's a vanity moment. I can show you. We will not. Will you be?
No, I don't put the video up. It's just audio. Yeah.
Okay. So for anyone who doesn't know, this is what the, you know, you have. This
yeah,
thing.
I have
this,
that. Yeah, it's beautiful. I love it. Yeah.
And, you know, whenever, sometimes I go to check on bookstores and comic shops and see, and I realize that you cannot tell. When it's like this, you cannot tell.
Yeah, it's too skinny. And
then, yeah, and then you have like the trade paperback.
Your name's on the side.
Yeah, and you have the little tag, and this is the new one. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And this is the new one. And you have like this nice logo vertical and the title, and you realize that. Even when you go like this, tuck, 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 you know, you know when you brush your finger across the shelf, and then you, if it's like this, if it's just like a floppy copy, you have to pull it out.
Yeah, but you're right.
When you have like the spine and everything, it strikes differently. And this is when I saw it for the first time, I realized that I want this one. So now I have like a bare minimum that. Every comic that I make should be at least 56 pages, which the guy that prints the comics told me that it's the bare minimum to have like a spine and glue. So this is what I'm going for.
I love it. No, I don't think that's vain. I think it makes sense. I mean, it's so true. You know, like you can see the books behind me. I've got all those illustrated Jane Austen books behind me. And I have them face out, right? Because they're beautiful. And I want them, I treat my books as art, you know, and I think there is something to that. I do think there's something to letting it stand. It can stand on a shelf. It can stand in a stand. And I mean, and because when you do a floppy, an old school floppy like that, you know, like yours, Dreamlands, it's in a bag it's in a bag. Do you know what I mean? Because I don't want anything. It's in a bag with a board where the book could be on my shelf. And I, you know, so it's not vain. It's also, it is, but it isn't. I mean, we all want, I mean, I've got a heart. I don't know where it's way I need to leave. Like right there, there's a hard copy of my book front facing on my shelf behind me because that's fucking cool. And you're proud of your work and you should be proud of the work because you do, you really do amazing work. So you should be proud of it. It should sit on a shelf.
Thank you. It's also that's a cultural difference thing because the thing is self-publishing in Greece and Europe is if you're doing self-publishing, it's mostly you're doing fanzines. You know what fanzines are?
Yeah, of course. Sure. Yeah.
Like fan magazines. And if you don't have spines, if they're with like the, if they're with a pin.
Staple.
Yeah, with a staple, sorry. With a staple. Then people associate that it's not a professional work. It's more of an amateur. But ever since like the paperbacks came out, because now, Tony, now we have Dreamlands Lives and Epics 2, we have Dreamlands World Workers, we have No Heroes Volume 1, which is 132 pages. We have Helldivers, which is another 100 pages. They come to us during cons, and they ask, the question is, are you a publishing house? Because they realize that because we're somewhere in the middle. We are not a large, well, for Greek standards, we're not a large publishing house, but we produce more books and more stories than others in a more compact way for others to have them and stand by themselves.
Yeah, but I think that's important. But again, it's work. You've put in the work to get there too. So I think, you know, and again, you're right. I do think, you know, like for me, you know, in publishing, traditional publishing, there is still a gatekeeper. And I don't love that, but I also understand it. Like, I understand how you need an editor. You know, when you're publishing a book, my book's 100,000 words. I want an editor to read it. I want somebody to read it and double check and read over my shoulders. You know, even the most professional book, like if I had a typo in a Stephen King book, I have, they exist. But you don't want that. You know, that's part of it. But it is like one of the last things where there are gates, and I don't love that. I don't want there to be gates. I want people to tell their stories. And that's what I love about indie publishing, about comics and music, is it gives you that opportunity to be like, no, I can put that out. And what that is a huge compliment that everybody's paying you, and you guys are at cons. They see you. They're like, oh, are you a public? And you know what they're asking? They're like, they want to pitch you. That's what they're also asking, is they're like, they love what you're doing, and it's so sharp and it's so, you know, sturdy, and it's all the things that, you know, something from Dark Horse or Boom or, you know, anybody, Top Cow would be. So then they're like, oh, well, I want to pitch you. That's the next question they want to ask you. It's like, are you a publishing company? Are you accepting submissions?
We do. Actually, we do. If people want to work with us, we do. And they, I think we are really not that. One of the things that you have to realize, whether you like it or not, and it's not an ego thing, is you always have to realize that people, especially when it comes to artists, they put in way more hours than writers do. You have to acknowledge it, whether you like it or not. They put in hours. Like Stelios does the penciling, the inking, the toning, the lettering. He does everything by himself.
I thought you did the letters. He does the letters too.
I help him, but it's basically like, look, I am putting in the letters.
You're just typing.
Yeah, like can you do the bubbles to actually, like, you know, stand? And he does the graphic design and the interior design. They put in way too many hours for me to go and tell them that, okay, this is how you should do it. It's not an ego thing. I mean, I know the work that I'm putting in, and I know that my partner is the soul and the heart of our comics, because he has like this vision, which without him it would be completely different. So even if he does something differently, we will not get into a conflict. I can tell. I'm at a point in my, let's say, editing chair where I can tell that something does not work, because you've worked with comic artists. If something does not work, you have to tell them, you have to catch it in time and tell them that, okay, you're inconsistent here, you have to work that. Because for now, we have worked with seven artists, and now I'm currently doing a manga with a person that he's not the most experienced one, but he has great potential. And you have to be patient, because I had to tell him, okay, we have a deadline, but if you rush it, it will not make any, you, the more you rush, the more corrections and editing we'll have to make. And this would be time wasting for both of us. So spend more times, you know, character designing and everything, and then come back to me. So yeah, we are expecting submissions, and we really lax on working conditions.
That's nice. We'll make sure we put all the links and stuff in there. So before we get to you telling all the cool shit we can get, I do want to hear about that, because this is different. So it's like you guys are Bernie and Elton John this time, where, like, you know, Bernie writes words and Elton John adds music. Most people do it the other way, and you normally do it the other way. So this time he came to you with 20 pages and then it's like, I got this story, I need you to help me finish it. So what was that like process wise for you? Because it's not like you don't trust him and it's in your same world that you invented. So what, I would just love to know, like, you've got 20 pages and you need to get it to 100, and you've got 20 images, or he gave you 20 pages?
20 pages. No,
he gave you 20 full pages.
He doesn't do images. He does pages. Do you want me to show you the pages?
Yeah, yeah. That's amazing. He did the full page.
Yeah, so because he does everything on paper. Okay, he does. He works on. He does the penciling and the inks on paper and everything. So, let me just share my screen. Can you?
It says you started. Yeah, it's coming. There it is. Oh shit!
Yeah, so he went there. Yeah, like, you have to imagine that everything drawn on paper, and because that's the thing. And I think you can support this idea.
Oh, if you my have God.
Yeah, if you have something in your brain, like, you know, this concept, you have to either put it out on paper or, like, delete it from the brain, because it crumbs up. It's crumbing up the space. And this is how it started. He says, like, I have this idea and I have to put it on paper because I cannot move on to something new. I have, like, to start drawing it. And he started drawing it. And then he was like, okay, it's going to end up with a huge battle between dragons and dwarves and giants. This is not a spoiler. It's a little bit of a spoiler. But yeah. And
that's right in the link. It says that there's going to be that stuff. So it's fine. Yeah.
And he says, okay, I have to like put it out. And then he comes to me, because we do conventions in Greece, we do them in Cyprus, in Malta, in the UK. We travel and we spend some time. And he's the more time we spent, because you have to fill out the, like, the time when you're on the ship, when you're at the airport. And we started talking. And I'm like, okay, how many pages are you? And he's like, I'm 20 pages. And I'm like, why do you do that? And he's like, yeah. Okay. But look at them, they're really cool. And I'm like, okay, we will have to redesign. I would have to redesign the whole structure of how I write the script so I can catch up with you. Because the thing is, usually the script is, like, really detailed, has, like, page one, panel one, blah, 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 reference, dialogue. It's structured as it should be to communicate the story. For now, I went to, like, how would I do it? I will do it with sequences. So I started, like, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, and I'm like, sequence one, TikTok, TikTok, sequence two, the gods do this, sequence three. So I didn't do it with pages, because I knew it would be very limiting, because I didn't have the vision in my head how he stages would do it. So I tell him, I will give you all the sequences and you pace it out however you like it. Because obviously you're much more, you have a much clearer vision of how this would be laid out. And this is what he did.
It's amazing. So for people, okay, so this is what's so cool, is that it's not like when you think about the way that art, comic art is done, it's like, so you think of a page, all those panels. So if it's six panels, when you see it as the writer or whatever, you see each panel, you may, like, the artist is doing the panels and then they're kind of putting them together on the pages digitally or whatever. He's giving you, like, full, like, the first page has got, like, six panels. Well, one of them is a back panel with, like, three panels over the top. There's a couple of splash pages already done. So he's done all the work, and this is all on paper.
Yeah.
And then you scan them in. So when he needs to make a change, he has to redo the whole thing, or once he scans it in, he can fix it digitally.
Trust me, Tony. Stages does a lot of things. He doesn't do changes. He will add pages. He would much rather add pages, a page or two,
to fill in a gap.
And correct anything.
Okay, so once it's in, it's in.
No, he has, like, this saying. He says you have to marry the lines you make, and that's what he does. He stands by the lines.
Well, they're beautiful. So, I mean, when you're that talented, as you say, that's amazing. So people, okay, so here's the thing, people, you need to get on World Walker. So the link's in the show notes to the thing. I while we were talking, because I was waiting, I was going to do that. I was going to do it live, but we were just having such a good time. So I've officially backed it during our conversation. Yeah, of course. So I can't wait to get it. It's always cool. I always know, because it's like, because it depends on if my regular postal delivery guy, or if it's like a backup person. The regular person will bring it, and I can, you know, bring it to the, because I live in a condo, and other times they bring the thing where it's like, I got to go down because you got to sign for it, because it's, you know, coming from out of the country.
Can I show you something to
sure?
I can show you the level of commitment he actually put in. So I will show you a page.
Yeah.
From it. So you see how, you see like those fragments here.
Yeah.
These are drawn by hand.
That's insane. The work that he's doing is insane.
He has actually drawn the little fragments to for the broken dragon by hand. And one of my favorite pages, that because he likes, you know, creating these for himself. He made this is a double page spread.
Yeah, I see it.
And he made everything, like, he has, when we first decided that we wanted to do the dragons, I remember the script, and I'm like, okay, he walks in the dragon chieftain's tent, the main character, and there are six dragons around him. And he's like, okay, first of all, this was supposed to be perhaps a splash page, or I think it was a panel, not a splash page. And he's like, okay, I will turn it into a splash page. And then he's like, no, I will do something even better. I will tell you a double splash page, and every dragon will be different. You have the stone dragon, you have a fire. And no, he actually sticks through with this, because the thing is, he puts in the work that he wants to see. Because that's the thing. The reason why we work so well, because I think I work better with Sages than with anyone else, is because he lets me focus on the story and how the characters will develop. And he says he creates the worlds he wants to see. And this is what I respect about him. He doesn't want a single dragon to appear and everything. He wants the world to be, to have substance, to have layers, to be something for you to see. One of my favorite things in it, he says, okay, I want you to create a race, like a race of fantastic, of you know, fictional beings. He says, like, what should we do? We should do it like a meme, like something funny. He says, okay, we want to create some bone chewing beavers. And then he's like, okay, I'm going to create some croco dragons. And he actually created a whole new species. And this is what we enjoy most. We don't, he doesn't, he's not, Stelios is not afraid of trying when it comes to Dreamlands. He's not afraid of always pushing himself to give something more to the reader.
And it works, and it comes through, and it's beautiful, and everybody should click on the links and stuff. So tell everybody, what are the cool things you can get? And again, people, no shipping. Like, everybody's kickstarted something, and you're like, oh, $15, and then it's like $5 for shipping or $12 for shipping. You didn't do any, you don't do that. So what are the cool, what are our options? What are the cool, are any of these originals going to be sent out? Is that an option? Are you getting any original art?
Original? No, you do get, what do you mean original art? Like the pages?
Like his actual pages that he drew on.
No, we haven't decided this option yet. You have an option to get a hand-drawn commission for 40 pounds would be an A5. Everything drawn, inks, it would be pencil inks, tones, everything would be by hand on paper. So
amazing.
What do you get on Dreamlands? You do have the option for the PDF one, which is 100 pages. Actually, it's going to be more than 100 pages, because we hit the third stretch goal, which so now we add comics to the, we add comic pages to the final project. We have like this one, 104, and I think it's going to be more pages of comics. You can get the physical version, which is the actual trade paperback, 104 pages, no shipping. Inside, like any with any other Dreamlands, it will have the comic and then extra pages with the map, folklore stories. You know the drill.
Like, I do. It's amazing. No, I love it. No, it's keep telling people. And they've got the little stickers I'm seeing. Those are cool.
Yeah, stickers, prints, basically the works. Actually, I can show you.
It's really beautiful. Yeah, and I've got, I mean, I'm looking at the thing. And again, when you guys, people click the link, there's all kinds of cool stuff. He's just so good that the images are amazing. And to get for £45 to get a commission like that, you can't. Oh, those, oh, look at that, that's cool. Nice. Yeah. He showed me the stickers. They're little vinyls.
Yep. They don't, they're waterproof, they're transparent, so you do get this. You can stick them anywhere you want.
Yeah, put them on your windows, put them in your car. Yeah. Those are always cool. Actually, of course, I can't show you because I'm on my computer. Gabe Chang, who I've mentioned a few times, he's like you. He's come out a bunch of times. He's got some really cool indie. He sent me a sticker that said, "I support indie comics." So I covered the logo on my computer. So if I'm sitting somewhere in public, I put that sticker to cover the MSI logo on my computer. And actually, the MSI logo is cool because it's a dragon, but I covered it with his sticker. So yeah, there's all kinds of cool stuff. This is so cool. So this is the thing we were talking off air. So I want you to end big and explain to everybody. And we talked about building a community and whatever, but explain to people why it's really important that they support a kick, why they find people they want to support Kickstarters, why Kickstarters help make good art.
I think it's a question of crowd. It's not just Kickstarter. Okay. I think Kickstarter has marketed itself very well to be known as the dominant crowdfunding. The key is crowdfunding. I think we can all agree we would much rather have 150 people give us, let's say, $10. Or five, or one, or two, then have 10 people give us $100. I think this is where we should be focusing on, to reaching out, to creating something for as many people as we can to get them involved, because little by little we can make it more sustainable for everyone, and it's a win-win, because if I get them into comics, people will actually start reading more comics in general. Maybe they like mine more and they will support me more, a bit more unconditionally. But they will be able to, let's say, they will be more willing to try new things. They will be more open to ideas. And this is what independent creators should be striving for, because the key for having creative freedom, for truly being independent, is to have this idea of people, of a community that you can fall back on. Not every month, because for some it can be a strain. For some people, it is just about timing. Maybe they don't have the time to support or whatever. But you should be fostering a community for that. In order to, let's say, because like we say in the beginning, we made a joke that how simple would it have been to have a rich patron to support
you.
Right,
exactly. Yeah.
This would have been the ideal, for someone to actually be paying for you, and all day, all you would do is put in the 8-10 hours, so you can just do the creative work. But it's not like this. You have to and I prefer having a community around my work, because I think it's a reality check. Having a community, you have to constantly push yourself to think, are they supporting me because of my work, or are they supporting me because of me? And that's a whole different discussion.
It is, yeah.
Another time. Because I think for now we are losing a little bit of focus of what matters. For me, it's always art over creator. But whole new different discussion for another time.
We will have to set that up and have that, because I think that is an interesting conversation to have, and I have it with people, with creators all the time. You know, can you love good art if the person is an asshole? That's a tough, you know, yeah. No, for real. You're not one, though. You're awesome.
Thank you.
So I agree. I couldn't agree more. And I, you know, when I started the show, 4 years ago. That was it. I started looking around and it was like, who are some cool people on here? I found you on Kickstarter. You know, we started emailing. Here we are. A couple of other people that I always happily support and I get excited about. And like you said, sometimes it's like you said, it kind of becomes unconditional. It's like, oh, Thanos has got a new project. You're going to back it, right? Like, Gabe's got a new comic. I'm going to back it. And there's sometimes it's just like, oh, well, you know, nobody I know has got a Kickstarter out. There's a friend of mine, Julian. He's got his own company. He's got his own publishing company. They're called Martian Lit. He has a Patreon. So I just do that. $3 a month. He sends out digital comics. You know, it's great.
That's basically the thing, because if you put it down in perspective, in long term, it's actually just like buying a book from a local bookstore. I don't think it's that much of a dent. In your, you know, unless you have, we are actually struggling.
Yeah.
Unless
you
have major financial problems, supporting an independent, whatever, should be one of your priorities in your monthly budget. I'm not saying that, you know, boycott anything that's mainstream. Boycott, and it's mainstream for a reason. But if you want to allocate your funds and say that, okay, what am I going? Did I buy an independent comic today? Because unless people try to rip someone off and have it insanely expensive, usually you get your money's worth.
Always. I've never felt ripped off. There's never been a Kickstarter that I backed, or there's never been, you know, like a patron that I backed. And sometimes, you know, it's like you said, sometimes financially you'd be like, okay, well, this month I got to cut a couple, I'll like rotate the musicians. So there's like three musicians that I support on the regular. And then there's some that I'll like, where I'll be like, okay, I'm going to support this person for 5 months or 3 months. And then I'm going to switch this person for 3 months. Cause I can't, every musician that I love, I can't support them all on Patreon. But if I can say every 3 months, I'm going to switch. So every year that person gets $15 or $30 from me, spread out over the year or whatever, and that if 50 people do that, that helps them make the next record, which makes me happy. Yeah,
like that's what you mean. It's not, you don't need a massive you don't need like and I think, again, people are struggling, struggling to make ends meet. It's a reality, and we understand that when it comes down to whether you will buy groceries or buying comics, you should always be buying groceries.
Of
you should
course.
Always be paying your rent. But if you get an opportunity to, you know, buy a book for the price of a drink or a beer, buy the book.
I agree. We're going to end there. That's beautiful. Thanos. Okay, so in the links, we've got your Kickstarter, Loudmouth Crew. Now, you said you have a patron, which I didn't know about. So I'll email you and you'll send me the link so I can put that in the show notes. Where you're on, tell everybody, all the links will be in there, but where can everybody, you're on, I know you're on Instagram because that's where we normally chat. Where are you? Tell everybody where you're at.
Our most active platforms are Instagram and X. Yeah. We do post on Threads, not that often though. We're trying to, I don't have that much energy to spend on, you know.
It's hard. You're doing all this other awesome work.
About our comics. You can find our comics on Gumroad, where you can find everything we've published so far. We do have some issues on Amazon, but we will be doing a big cartel e-shop soon, so you can a place where you can get the physical copies.
Nice. Yeah, Gumroad's the best, man. I love it. I get your stuff from Gumroad. That's where we had our students buy it. Avery Hill, they're a comic company out of the UK. They do, that's the only place you can get digital stuff from them is on Gumroad. Gumroad's got all the cool shit, man. I wouldn't have actually known it was, if it weren't for you, you're the one who taught me what it was. I didn't know that it was a thing. So the world is full of places to get really good art. So, he gave me the link right there. Oh, it's just Loudmouth Crew. Loudmouth Crew. I always want to say Loudmouth, but it's Loudmouth Crew. So patreon.com/Loudmouth Crew. So I'm going to obviously support that this month. You guys should too. All the links will be in the show notes. And friend, thank you.
Thank you for having me.
Yeah. And this is great. So we're recording this. We're going to do a quick turnaround. This is coming out on March 13th. The Kickstarter is open for to the 8th of April. So people got two more weeks after they hear this, right?
Yep.
And they need to get on that. So, okay, there it is. Join. Oh, you even have join for free. That's how you guys are. You're willing to give stuff away for free just to join your Patreon. That's amazing. Wow. Crazy bananas. Well, I will join the tier. So I appreciate you, my friend. This has been great. And thanks everybody for listening and support art. And if you just art matters. So it's always lovely to talk to a fellow artist and creative. So thanks everybody for listening and make sure you get this book, get your hands on this. Thanks, Thanos.
Thank you so much, Tony.
Adjectives on the typewriter. He moves his words like a prize fighter. The frenzied pace of the mind inside the cell. The man on the street might just as well be. The man on the street might just as well. The man on the street might just as well be. Say it all, say it all, say it all, say it all, say somebody got to say it all. Somebody got to say it all. I'm so nervous, I'm so tense, my heart can't forget about this self-defense. When the air is so hot and my breath comes fast, the cool blade, but I know this can't last.
So tense.
I thumb the cool blade, but I know this can't last.
Outside, outside the walls, out there you don't hear the echoes and calls, but the steel eye, tight jaw, say it all, say it all. But the white paint, plastic saints, say it all, 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 say somebody got to say it all. Somebody got to say it all. Adjectives on the typewriter. He moves his words like a prize fighter. The frenzied pace of the mind inside the cell. The man on the street might just as well.